Dave Braden was a longtime counselor for Ward 14 in Hamilton. That's actually the Flamborough area. He was a unique counselor in the fact that he always looked ahead, especially when it came to money figures. He was the only counselor I remember concerned about the budget from every detail. Recently, Dave Braden brought his new ideas, which aren't really new ideas in other cities and centers, to Hamilton Council's attention. He wanted them to think about all the suburbs on the mountain that are now dated, the ones that were built in the 40s and the 50s. Let's change a few zoning laws so we can make some additions to those houses, either by going up or extending their backyard. And you can make a separate living unit on that property, which will now be able to pay taxes. It's a great way for the city to find money they desperately need, and it also helps to solve the problem of the homeless and the lack of housing that we have in Hamilton.
Communication breakdown. Pause for the message, wake up. Every station is a gentrification. Global syndication is the shaping of the nation. But do we even know who plants the seeds? You think the media works for you, but it's a job for them. They're just selling fruit.
The other side of the news.
Ignorance grows from the spirit like a tumor. Till freedom is a rumor.
Here are Dave's ideas.
So the reason that I did this is I've tried to write this book about energy efficiency, and yes. I have one chapter on what happens beyond your unit. So, you know, beyond your front door.
Okay.
And I'm trying to educate the population to say, look, you know, if you make your building energy efficient, that's a great thing, but don't stop there, because the energy that is used, either that you use or that is used on your behalf, i.e., you know, the fire service that goes by your door or anything else, that's the next thing to work on.
Right.
So the first thing is your own space, and the next thing is the collective space that you use with others.
Well, you know, I'm going to take it back to apartment dwellers, because we're lost totally. We're completely not in the loop.
No. And I mean, if there was... The real benefit of this thing, and I didn't want to go on about this, is that when we start renewing, and I call it suburbia. I mean, to me, the Hamilton Mountain is just an old suburb.
Yeah.
Now, some people object to the term, but so, I mean, we can call it, we can be more diplomatic. We can say, you know, the peripheral area of the old cities, or the areas of cities where they have low-density development. Those areas that have, you know, the infrastructure of cost the same, no matter if it's low development or high development, really, because the standards are the same. The money that we're not making in terms of using those assets is extremely expensive. Holy smokes. I started the talk by saying we are aware that the Hamilton is behind in its required infrastructure maintenance program $150 million a year. Then I told them that that's the equivalent of, because we need an image. The equivalent is, that's like building a new stadium each and every year, but with no future funds. Right? Just straight out of the taxpayers. That's the amount we're behind if, in fact, we get on it this minute. We're not going to get on it this minute, and therefore the number is going to be much higher. And so rather than give them any lecture, I just said, here's what you could do that will cost the city absolutely no money. And I don't know how many city blocks there are in the Hamilton Mountain, but I suspect there are at least 200.
200 city blocks in Hamilton?
Yeah. On the mountain?
On the mountain. How did you come up with that?
Well, I'm just guessing. I'm just sort of thinking about it, and that's every single street. Well, every single street where there's a block.
So the mountain area is defined by, give me borders?
Well, the reason I use the mountain is because I thought if you use anything other than that, it may not be relative to the city council. I want to be able to speak to them and say, look, I'm just picking not a street on the Hamilton Mountain. Well, the idea is that if you picture a composite, a street that has a lot of average features. So it had two 1940 wartime houses.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been built in the houses. So things that look like they're just a box, tiny little square box, a couple of rooms upstairs. right? Yeah. And so not the skinny little house in Westdale that's 14 feet wide, but this is a house that's sort of 20 by 20 or 24 by 24. So I had a couple of those, and then I had like a 1950 ranch, and then a 1960 maybe split level, and a 1980 maybe split level or something else. But by and large, just typical low density, not special houses.
Yes, the series of how suburbs sprawled.
Yep, and I didn't define the frontage, but the frontage is probably 45 or 50 feet because these are old houses and they had bigger frontages. And then I talked about the fact that, and this is important, that basically all houses get serious renewal or renovation after approximately 50 or 60 years. It happened for a whole lot of reasons. The main reason, I think, is that people have, you know, this has been an affluent area, it has in the past, and people have wanted to modernize the house. And modernize might be, you know, much better electrical wiring that was installed first. I mean, we've only had electricity out here for 60 years. People will put a whole electrical system, a new electrical or a new plumbing system. I mean, mostly what people do is they put in new kitchens and bathrooms. But lots of it is also simply by choice. Just the same reason people buy a new car or a new dress, they just want something modern.
Okay, so they're upgrading stuff.
So it's upgrading, and it's difficult to tell. But if you simply sit back and say, not that we're going to have an opinion about why they're doing it, but it's simply it happens. And the old wartime house that has a crawl space that you can't heat in, there's, you know, the structure itself doesn't lend itself to putting some insulation in the wall because the structure, in fact, it may not survive.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, I suggested demolishing those houses and replacing them, because two lots would be a total of about 100 feet. Putting in something that was low scale, pretty low scale. In one case, a part of it hit three stories. And if you demolish two houses, you could put something up that is similar in theme and appearance. I mean, similar, not identical in any way. And you could put five units in the place of the two. And then you've got five units paying tax. You've got five families living where there were two. And still, it's in no way crowded. And when you do that, of course, you don't, you especially if many people are part of this game, lots of different kinds of dwelling units will get created. Let's say you had, your mother and dad left you a two-story house. It would seem to me you would be thinking carefully about not spending more money, but seeing if you could divide that house in two or three, so that you could create income for yourself and you'd be able to stay where you are. And maybe if it was a second floor house, you'd have a second floor apartment. And maybe if you were allowed, you could create something that might have a basement apartment, or it might be a single room on the main floor that you could rent out. Right? Something simple. But anyway, the reason that I went to the city is that they're redoing what they call the comprehensive zoning bylaw. If they take that two-floor house that I just talked to you about, there will be rules. In most cases, you can't do anything to that house that's different without going to the planning committee and probably either doing a rezoning or an official plan amendment. So right off the bat, you could be looking at fees up to about $3,000. Just before you even get a building permit. Well, lots of people don't have that kind of money. Or it's strictly they have that money, but that's discouraging enough that they don't even start. What I went to the city was and said, you need to realize that this is something that can easily happen. We should be promoting it because creating more housing units in an urban area is desirable for the city for two counts. One is it's energy efficient. Two is it's cheaper to provide the services. So I'm trying to get them to, I will use, loosen the zoning restrictions and putting them in there so that a person who had that two-story house would be just easier, more convenient, and easier for you to make the decision, including the decision maybe to spend money to make it more efficient or to have a separate entrance. right now there are too many obstacles, including the zoning one. And I can tell you this, if there are a whole lot of streets, if there's a whole line of houses on a street, and you owned one of these two-floor houses, and you were applying to, say, put an apartment upstairs, and nobody else was, the reasonable reaction from the neighbors would be, geez, we don't want people putting apartments in their house. Mm-hmm. None of us have apartments in our house. There's that thing about, well, we can't let one person do it because it's threatening. And it seems to me there is much less threat if you simply say, this is something we need to do. All people are going to be able to have the right to do this, but there are certain conditions, and the conditions have to be fulfilled. Whether the conditions are fire safety or parking or the scale of the house. There's lots of people are worried about the houses are going to get too high or
too narrow. No space in the yard or too close together.
Yep, and in fact, my assumption is that woman, Brenda, who's now on the council.
Brenda Johnson.
Yep, she asked me an interesting question. She said she looked at the two drawings and she said, it doesn't look like the roof area between the first, the old profile of, and then the new profile is much different. And I said that it's there for a specific reason, especially Hamilton is a little bit gun-shy of this whole flooding issue in cities.
It wouldn't flood on the mountain so much as it would down. What was Ms. Johnson's point?
Oh, her point was, is this going to create additional problems or additional sort of accumulation of storm water, and is this going to create a problem for drainage? And I said, if this is done appropriately, where you increase the space of the house, the condition could easily be that you accommodate any additional creation of storm water. Developers have to do it. Subdivision, so when I was a subdivider, I had to do it. There's an expression that is pre-development flows.
Pre-development flows?
Flows, like the flow of water.
And what's that going to cover?
Well, if we go back to that initial idea that if you lived in a wartime little, I'll call it a cottage, and if it was 24 by 24, and you decided to double the land, the building envelope, so that you were going to build backwards, and instead of make it 24 by 24, you were going to make it 24 by 48. It means that there's double the amount of roof area, and that then building would be contributing more water to a potential flood. If, on the other hand, the standard was, you're welcome to double the building envelope on the ground, providing that you accommodate in a thing like a cistern that additional flow, you can do it. So in other words, there's a responsibility. Yeah, you get to expand, but two, you have to do it in such a way that you're not creating a problem. And that's what subdividers have to do. So it's a long-standing approach to the fact that you can't make the flood potential worse. And if you were building an extension on a little wartime cottage, you could put a cistern inside the basement. And I mean inside, not outside.
Well, the crawl space is the basement.
Well, that's in the old place. But if you build a new house, you probably wouldn't build a crawl space. You probably wouldn't. But anyway, you could do it either in the basement or in a separate tank underneath the grass.
Okay.
And you'd probably be able to easily afford to accommodate a sort of a Hurricane Hazel type flow for the extra roof area. Not maybe for the one you have, but both could be done. I mean, they could even create a standard to say, if you reduce the flow on your roof by half and you accommodate all the new roof, you can do this and the building permit's free.
Well, they're pretty close together up there, so maybe one of the concerns is you're raising the roof, it's higher, it's slightly bigger piece of building, so you're adding more rainwater onto your neighbor's yard.
So what you have to do is you have to be able to say, just like a subdivider, you have to be able to accommodate that water somewhere. So you could easily do it with a tank in the ground, and that tank in the ground could have a small hole in the bottom of it.
Okay.
That's what you do in these retention ponds. So in other words, for the first 2 hours of a storm, all the water would go into that thing, and then it would slowly drain into the ground.
Okay.
But anyway, what I mean is there's understood engineering approaches which are really quite economical that wouldn't drive the cost of these conversions or new space. If it's strictly a conversion, back to the two-story house, you know, there's no more rainwater if you simply have an apartment upstairs and you live downstairs. It's if you extend the roof that you're making the thing worse. And again, if you do it at the same time, the economics works very nicely.
So this is an idea to tighten the infrastructure on the mountain area of Hamilton and give some more money into the coffers of City Hall.
Yeah. So here, the starting point is the city is behind $150 million as of about 13 months ago. And the $150 million is per year, each and every year. So after 4 years, we're behind $0.6 billion. And right now, there is really no plan of any kind to deal with this.
There never was there?
No. No. I mean, it's raised, and it was a particular issue of mine that I raised. Now, I did not say this at the City Hall, but in my work in another project involving manufacturing cars, we were dealing with a number of people in the provincial government who are cabinet ministers.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of Hamilton's long-term financial stability came up. I talked to them, and it was made very clear to me by three cabinet ministers, they probably don't want to be named, that if the city is aware of what the problem is, and they are not really dealing effectively with a response, it is not reasonable to assume that the province is going to come in and bail them out.
Yeah, they got to make sure they're doing something.
That's right. I mean, I think that the province recognizes that surely they are going to have to come to the table. But if the initiative and if the approach isn't started by the local government, the province isn't going to be sort of blamed or hung with this problem. Because this problem is now very well understood, at least by staff. And so I'm coming in that vein that says, we need an answer. Eventually the taxpayers are going to have to pay for this problem. And it is scary. The longer it's scary now, but it's way more scary if we put it off. Because some people don't understand compound.
So you're suggesting this, instead of a stadium idea or going in that direction, to help with the housing problem instead?
This will do a couple of things. First of all, it will help the city pay its own bills, because eventually the city is only you and I, and we will have to pay this bill. Right now it's $150 million. If they put this off for about four more years, and there's an increase in energy costs, which we all expect, by that time it'll probably be $250 million a year. Increasing, therefore, by $1 billion every 4 years, there's going to come a time very soon where this problem is just simply too big. And the city, it's not reasonable for the city to suddenly say, we're going to increase taxes 50% just to pay for the infrastructure. That may have to happen, but I don't see politicians really having the courage to say, we have to do it. We've put this off long enough. We're going to increase taxes. You know, when they increase taxes 5%, people go crazy. So the first thing it does, the city, although the city has no real personality, the city will it'll help the city very much pay for its bills. The second thing is, it will, to certain homeowners, whether it's the young people that are 25 and they're overextended because houses are expensive, having some flexibility with a house to perhaps rent some of the space, or maybe simply to house their in-laws.
Mm-hmm.
But something like that, which before was basically illegal or certainly frowned upon.
Right.
This could now, and if you can look after your in-laws, clearly it's going to be easier because they might be able to help you with a rent. The likelihood is, if everybody could get a zoning which takes whatever they have, so let's say you live in a single-family house, and if the automatic zoning allowance says you can move up to the next density, which might be semi-detached houses, or let's call them duplexes, and if the people that have a duplex could then have an allowance that they could move up to maybe row housing, and row housing might be able to move up to maybe having row housing with an extra floor, or something like that. So we're talking about allowing one step up in terms of increased density, but not more than that. What we're really not talking about is, on a block, allowing all the houses to be bulldozed and putting up a high-rise.
Yeah, how feasible do you think that might be in the city council?
Well, I think it needs a champion. It needs somebody that's got some confidence. What I think it needs is really some more effort from the press, because there really right now are about four choices. The first choice is, let's not discuss it, let's not do everything, and let's simply put this off. So that's by and large, without being too critical, that's what's being done now. In other words, this is too big a problem, let's not talk about it. That's one response. The other response is to say, this is a huge problem, we got to get on it right this minute. We are passing an additional tax, and it's called the infrastructure tax, in which every property owner across this region, urban, rural, corporate, industrial, commercial, will increase their taxes 22%, because that's about the number. That's right. Right? So that's a legitimate approach, but that's not happening anyway. There's a third one. The third one is to say this, that frontages cost real money to the city as opposed to necessarily the homeowner. And if they said, like hydro, you know, when you look at your hydro bill, you get a bill for the energy used. You probably get a bill for the, and I don't get hydro bills, so I don't know, but you get a bill for maybe the nuclear expansion, or, you know, getting rid of the debt. And then I think there's another bill for distribution, so getting the electricity the Horizon office or the high-horizon distribution system to your door. So the hydro bill now is a number of things. It would seem very reasonable that the city, if the city doesn't use its infrastructure more efficiently or get revenues from it, they may well have to say, look, everybody gets 15 feet of frontage with their taxes, and everything over that, they're going to pay $25 a foot for the additional number of feet in order to help pay for their water and sewer and stormwater. And that would be a thing that would in fact be seen by some, maybe engineers, as very fair. The bottom line is that the system is broken. We have the asset, and we can't afford to look after it. So there needs to be a payment, and the payment needs to be in tax, as a levy, or simply more assets paying into the tax pool. I'm suggesting the only practical one is there is more assets. Now, Terry Whitehead, Councillor Whitehead, said that, you know, families want to live in areas just with families, with big backyards, and preferably areas where other people are similar to the families. And my response is, well, that, you know, that's the last half of the 20th century model. Lots of people still have that same dream, but the dream seems to be much, much less practical than it ever was before. And it doesn't help in any way solve this $150 million problem.
Would you consider that situation for your place, for your house, people living in the end of your backyard?
Well, I would. I think, I mean, I'm a rural person, so there is a thing that is related. It's different. In the rural area, especially as we get older, we want to be able to get help at certain times, whether it's with farm work or whether it's strictly, you know, changing a light bulb. You know, we have the same physical issues as we get older or less able, that we need people nearby. And we don't want a situation where, you know, the reasonable likelihood is that we got to call somebody out from another area or the city to come and change a light bulb. I'm being a bit facetious. But, you know, to change the light bulb probably would cost $100 if we had an apartment upstairs and that person was renting, or we just sort of shared the same roof. It's likely that that person would come down and change the light bulb for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that increasingly in the future, as dollars get more scarce and as people need to become more responsible for some of the things on their own, the allowance to make houses more flexible in terms of what's going on under the roof, how many units there are, that will then make them more of a city, create more affordable housing. In my book, I think there's no question that some people might be renting cheaper. I mean, I for one, rent out to somebody at a very preferred rate, because occasionally that person can help me out, and that's worth a great That's worth real money to me.
What you're describing is happening in Montreal. I have a friend of mine doing exactly what you're doing. So obviously the laws in Quebec allow people to do this.
Yep, they often do, and they often do if they're downtown. So I specifically didn't use the word downtown. The big challenge is going to be in anything that isn't high density. So anything that was a suburb 50 years ago, or simply a low-density urban development. The cost of looking after low density is just too darn high. And you know, it has been approved in the past. It was appropriate for their day. And the reason I bring up the fact that houses need to be completely, not need to be, but are often completely renovated or changed. Well, here's a good example. I use this. When they built the city hall that we have now in Hamilton, they probably built it in about the 60s. It was a modern building. I mean, you know, people were hoping that it would last a long time. When in the early 21st century we were looking at what we were going to do, the assessed value of the city hall, even though it was standing up and had all the pipes in it and things basically worked, the net value of that building was zero.
Hmm.
So if you take it that it was an expensive building when it was built, I mean, it's still there. It wasn't falling over. But if you took the value of that building and said, what's it going to cost to renovate it? Really, the net value of that building was zero. That's not going to happen to houses, because houses, for some reason in this country, are still far too expensive. But it means that a big part of their value, when they're 50 years old, is gone. And some people are lucky enough to have the money to make it modern or safer or more usable. And in fact, some don't. There will be some living in the wartime cottage that they're living very close to the line that might be on fixed income. And unfortunately, they can't do it.
So what zoning laws have to change?
Well, basically, almost all houses are built at the limit of intensification. In other words, if you live on George Street, I'm making that up because it probably is a George Street. The zoning for George Street, if you live at number 12 George Street, there's probably zoning in there that says it has to be single family and it has to be so far back from all the lot lines, and you really can't do anything with it. What we want is for the zoning on George Street to say, if you are presently in single family zoning on George Street, as of right, the planning department will look at or approve or consent to having it one level higher. And I'm just using that as to massage that. But the idea, it can be one density group higher than it is. And you don't have to apply for it.
You have to apply?
No, right now you would have to. So if you own a house in the Hamilton Mountains on a side street, and whatever it is, and you want to have an in-law suite upstairs, or you want to simply have a separate unit upstairs, or you want to have rent out three rooms, you want to bump the attic up and create a two-story addition on the top, I mean, the attic plus one other floor, you would have to start with probably a rezoning application. And I'm guessing that's about $1,500. That's rezoning. That's not a variance. That's a rezoning. That could be $3,000. But anyway, it's a lot of money up front. That requires you to generally get some very good help. It requires you to go through a zoning process. And part of that process is that anybody that within so many feet of your house, 400 feet of your house, would first of all get notice of it.
Mm-hmm.
And second of all, if you got approval from the local authority, that being the city of Hamilton, anybody within 21 days could appeal that.
Right.
That would then go to the OMB. So you would just assume that it would be held up at least 6 months or a year, that there would be considerable expense, and it wouldn't be sort of conclusive after the end of that appeal process and nobody complained. If, again, you were on a side street and you were the only one applying for this, it would attract attention from many others. And the likelihood is that you would be held up a lot, that you might just give up. And again, personally, in a situation like your own, because we can't do zoning for people, we do zoning for land. Personal issues are not supposed to be part of it. Zoning is written not for people, not for individual specifics, but for for a time, because if you live in your house and you move, then what we created, what you are allowed to create, is doesn't move with you. So it's not supposed to be relevant. That's not supposed to be part of the case. I would agree that it is considered, but it's technically not supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to the issue, if everybody in your street is allowed one thing up as of right, so in other words, they would pass something in the zoning that says your zoning holds, but you are allowed, without applying, to take it up one density level, then there is no requirement for a need to get sort of neighborhood permission. You don't have to go through the OMB process. You go to the building inspector and say, you know, I want to put a second floor in. And you do that in a way that's safe, and you get it. So there is nothing unknown other than you got to do plans. And if you do the plans and meet the code, you're in.
Okay, so what if one of your neighbors doesn't like the idea of you raising your roof?
Well, the roof, there needs to be, I think in the first case, and every neighborhood would be different, but by and large, it would appear to me to be everybody should be able to have at least a two-story house. Now, there'd be some areas in Hamilton that only have one story. And again, I think, I mean, even two-story houses, I'm not sure two-story houses can pay the freight on infrastructure. So, I can say this, that likely 50 or 60 years from now, they go through the same area and the same thing, and they'll probably be saying, well, you know, we got to do something. We can't afford to do this, so we're going to do it four stories. And Paris, of course, is the one that's always quoted. Paris is basically six stories.
No,
anybody
kidding.
Can do anything up to six stories. But I just know that you don't have to have elevators. You have to walk up six floors, because my sister-in-law used to live there.
That sounds like Montreal to me.
Well, it just there seems to be, if it isn't a rule, it's a sort of a something that basically
habit.
Everybody abided by for a few hundred years, and that was six stories is plenty of exercise. I mean, carrying your groceries up six floors would be a bit of a trick. But on the other hand, they would probably shop at least every day, so they're not carrying home too much.
That's part of it. Yeah. You're describing Montreal.
Yeah, yeah. It's the same. I mean, it's just a different approach. But again, the idea going back is Hamilton needs $150 million a year. They can tax for it, which would be very, I mean, I said 22%, but let me qualify that a bit. That's if every single taxpayer, including Stelco and including farmers, were going to pay 22% more on their taxes to pay for the infrastructure, which is basically an urban issue. If we said, look, the businesses are paying way too much, the apartments are paying, you know, 2.5 times what a single family house is. The apartments are paying too much. What we need to do is tax everybody that lives in the city, that lives in a low-density development. We need them to increase their taxes to pay for it. And at that point, it's probably 50% already.
Okay, so people have gone to low-density areas because they want low-density neighborhoods.
That's right. And the thing is that the people in low-density neighborhoods, like it or not, are not paying enough to look after the infrastructure. Now, they may think they're paying too much for policing or parks or fire service or something else. But if we assume that we're all paying reasonably high for everything, what we are not paying, what we people that are living in cities, and it may be that we're not paying in the country either. I'm trying not to sort of separate this, but what clearly is happening is that we're not paying enough to look after the urban streets. And that number is going up probably when I started my political life, it probably was something like 30 or 40 million. Now it's 150, right? So this is going through the roof. Yeah, but here's a reason why it's going to go, and we've talked about this before. Here's another reason why it's going to go up much higher, much faster. But infrastructure, the main kinds of infrastructure we have, the main ones, so there are others, but the main kinds of infrastructure, if you think about it, are concrete and asphalt and steel, And most of them have to be put sort of in place. It's not like you buy them at Walmart and you pay so much for them. What you do is you have to have them delivered to where they are, and that delivery also involves a lot of energy. So if they talk about the product in situ, so that expression about it's the asphalt on the expressway. We're not talking about asphalt at the plant. We're talking about asphalt where it needs to be. The energy cost of that product is very high, and as energy goes up, the cost of that product is going to be much, much higher.
Why is that?
Because something like asphalt is made out of bitumen, and bitumen, as I understand it, is really the dregs of the oil refinery process. And on that point, I mean, if you recall, when they were completing the paving of the Red Hill Expressway, there was a number in there we had for paving. I don't remember what it was, but in the end, that was the time when there was an energy premium on all sorts of products. And the people that were paving the Red Hill Expressway said, you know, we may have said we're going to do it for $6 million, but the price of oil is now $146 a barrel. Price of asphalt is now, you know, let's say, for argument's sake, 30% higher than it was before. So the city just simply agreed to it and paid more money, because paving companies aren't going to pave things and lose money. So the component, let me put it this way. If asphalt costs $100 for a load of asphalt and the price of energy doubled, it would seem to me that the price of asphalt is probably going to be way more than $100, because the asphalt ingredient, the bitumen, is in there. It's gone up a lot. And again, to make this far worse, we are now told the bitumen, so it's the dregs. It's the very poorest.
It's very expensive to pull out of the ground.
Yeah, but it's what's left over after you sell the airport fuel and the, and the gasoline and the propane and everything else. It's what's left over, but you need it. The guys need it. Well, when energy gets expensive, apparently what they do is they take the bitumen, the really the crappy leftover stuff, and they re-refine it again.
That's what I was going to say, recycle what's out there.
That's right, to get a bit more of the good stuff out, which makes, in fact, the bitumen even more expensive. So the result is the things as simple and basic as asphalt are going to get really expensive. So, and so is concrete. I mean, concrete needs a different kind of energy. It needs a lot of heat to make it out of limestone. Steel, of course, traditionally was using coal. There's a lot of fossil fuel in these products, and it's only going to go up. So in a simpler vein, here we've got all the infrastructure. Why not use that infrastructure more efficiently? Instead of having 100,000 people on that infrastructure, why don't we look at having 150,000? And people might think, oh, we don't want to be on top of each other. Every society in the world, apart from the North American model, lives closer together because it's way more efficient. There's nothing unneighborly or unfamily-ish about living. I mean, look at Cabbage Town in Toronto. Those townhouses are probably, I don't know, $1 million each. They could be 12 feet wide. People just give their IT set to move in there.
Right.
They got a lot of interest. Two, it's a great location.
They're four stories, and you can barely walk in between the buildings.
That's right. And some, they're attached. And is there anything wrong with raising a family here? Nothing.
Doesn't seem to be for them. It's a different lifestyle.
It is. But what I said to Terry Whitehead is that I really believe that this old dream about the separate house, you know, it's just like the old American postcard. It just doesn't fit anymore. If people have this idea, well, there should be a choice. Well, I think in some cases there should be a choice. I mean, I'm not sure that everybody should be allowed in the future to drive a Hummer that's very highly polluting. If you can drive 10 cars for the amount of pollution in a Hummer, whether or not that Hummer should be allowed to pollute the environment for me.
Well, you have to make the zoning, and the politicians are the ones that need to change the zoning, and they need to be educated, and some of them simply don't want to let go of their dream.
No, I think that's good. No, and I don't want to dream, Terry. In fact, I want to commend them for standing up and saying, look, this is what the dream is. The problem is that people are expecting that dream to be subsidized by other people. That's the point we don't have across.
Okay.
So if people want to live in that dream and they want to pay their way, then at least that economically that's feasible. Right now we don't have a feasible plan because people aren't paying their way. We simply have an infrastructure set up that either we can't finance or we refuse to finance, and the end result is that infrastructure is going to fall. It's going to fall.
We have done that kind of infrastructure in downtown city, in a lot of areas in downtown Hamilton, but
yep.
On the mountain, because there's shale and they couldn't build a basement for one reason.
Yep.
We've gotten away from that. Like you said, it started with wartime houses, tiny little places. I had one of those places, 800 square feet, about the size of an apartment, you know, 100-foot deep lot, 45 wide.
Yeah.
I could grow.
You could put some lovely housing in
at
there.
At the back.
You could have garden space.
Garden space,
back.
And at the back build a couple of rooms. But
that's all
we could do.
Yeah.
The terms of the limitations of the area, you could not dig down. And if you went up, well, you had a problem if you had a strong enough foundation. But you could go back.
Yeah. Well, I'm, the thing, you know, people used to say, and I went through planning school in the 70s, you know, that everybody ought to be able to have their feet near the ground. You ought to be able to have access to the ground, especially for rearing children. Well, I think it's just as important maybe to have people that are quite elderly that simply want to sit in the sun or want to have a wheelchair on the grass. Well, I think there's some legitimacy to this. But you can accomplish most of this without having low-density development. I mean, again, keep in mind, what the dream we've been sold is a dream nobody can afford.
Not anymore.
Right.
We have to change. So society has to change, and you're offering a solution. What was the result at City Hall when you made your presentation?
It was extremely favorable.
No kidding.
No. Yeah. There was no sort of, well, that's pie in the sky. I presented it as if this is an economic solution to a problem that right now no one is putting forth a potential solution.
Okay.
So I said, here it is. It's not a left wing, a right wing. It's a reason of saying we need more people paying taxes. There are some advantages to this, big advantages. It's going to be more efficient for people to live. So when you and I pay money, you might be able to live closer to where the action is or where you buy your food or wherever else it is. And it's going to be cheaper for your taxes because if the taxes are shared with more people.
Exactly.
You're right. So by and large, at the individual level, it's going to be a savings of money.
Well, the place locally is Ancaster, where you're going to get the biggest negative reaction, where people have money, can pay more, refuse to change.
Sure. Well, I mean, but yeah, I'd be a little bit inclined to, if you promoted this debate, this idea, and then you said, okay, we're going to do this neighborhood by neighborhood. If there are neighborhoods that simply don't want to consider having a higher zoning, what we could easily do for those is they could say, well, look, you can just pay the increase in taxes instead.
That's what they'll do.
Right? Well, that's fine. I mean, if the people
in Ancaster,
rich will
just pay their way around that intensification.
I mean, and you could do it but I think there's something to be said by if certain neighborhoods said, look, we are going to pay our way, but we don't want that. I'm a bit of a Democrat. That we could say, okay, well, look, they would prefer not to have to do this at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that could be reviewed every 10 or 20 years. But if there's an area in Hamilton that is less affluent, and it doesn't have to be less affluent, if they say, look, the way that we want to deal with this issue is we want to pay a lot levy on frontage, or we want to allow the zoning to allow higher density. That should do it. What we really need is simply, and if not a debate, we need this on the agenda. We need everybody to know that this is a huge problem. it's probably the biggest one. I mean, apart from poverty, this is a problem. Poverty you can actually try to avoid. You can just say, we're not dealing with this now. The infrastructure.
Well, it might help poverty if there are more affordable places for people to live.
Oh, for sure. I mean, and if you just take the example that, you know, when we were young, probably the average family was 4.5 people.
Mm-hmm.
If you take the average, and the word family is not the appropriate word, the average number of people in a dwelling unit, well, I think more than 33% have one person living in a dwelling unit. 33 is huge. Well, they don't need 800 square feet, right?
I mean,
everybody might want more, but if you lived before in a house that was 1,800 square feet and it used to hold 4.5 people, and now you're one person, you sure don't need 800. It makes all kinds of sense to use that space much more wisely.
Well, smaller spaces can be offset by having more parkland area.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I mean, if it gets to the point where this takes off, we will buy more parkland. But in fact, one of the good things we would be is that it seems to me we're having a bit of a policy where we're buying schools, and schools could well become the parkland.
Exactly.
But maybe they'd be reused as schools, because if you reinvigorate the neighborhood, there are going to be families that live there, right? You could be renting out your second floor to a young family with one or two children, right? They got access outside to the grass, and they got two kids that need to be educated. So it's just, there is nothing new about this idea at all. What's new is that it's being put forward by me to show that this solves the biggest economic problem that Hamilton has.
Exactly.
By far the biggest.
So you want to start in the mountain neighborhoods first, or would you rather start in a different kind of neighborhood?
Well, I think to start with, you generally always need an example. If people look at this, they will, and they are fearful, they will create all sorts of reasons to say we can't do this. Now, what some politician, if they're going to champion this, has to do is to say, well, what other ideas do you have? We're 22% high on tax. Do you want the tax? What do you want? And there needs to be an example. There needs to be a choice. So if we needed to do some PR, the city owns lots of Hamilton housing, for example, right?
Yes.
Housing units, some of which they wanted to sell and make a little cash or do something. It would seem to me a couple of projects so that people could look at them and say, well, hey, well, you know, that'd be fine in my neighborhood. That'd be all right. We want to be able to do it, but we need to move a little bit fast. It requires some championing, which we don't regularly find, but the backdrop needs to be, you know, we've got this huge problem, and 150 million. If people knew that they were going to have their taxes raised, and by the time it's going to be at least 25% now, and if it isn't done within a few years, it's going to be closer to 50. If people knew their taxes were going to go 50%, they would know that a huge number of people are going to have to leave this municipality completely.
Mm-hmm.
That's the fact. And a lot of people won't want to leave this municipality. So if they say, here is an alternative to leaving, we can do this, there's going to be some opportunity here to make some money, or to stay in the community, or to get assistance when we're older, or to get assistance to help pay our mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to cost the government. Most of the other things that are presented require a huge donation from the government level. This should be able to deal with a very, very minor assistance. I mean, it might well be that if you convert your house in the second floor and you create one more unit, maybe you get 1 year's deferral of the tax just to help you do it.
That's a good incentive.
Right? Just the first year, you don't pay any tax over and above what you're paying now.
Right.
And the local governments can make decisions according to taxes. Within their term of office. And maybe it could be if you create two extra units, you get 2 years free of additional tax. Right? I mean, clearly there's mm-hmm. going to be more tax because that's what we need.
Right, but you've got to give an incentive to get the thing
going. But there's more people to pay it.
Right.
The second thing is that I did say, but it might confuse some, as I said, the standards for construction are going to be increased. There's a new building code coming out this summer, and you know how I build.
Mm-hmm.
I did say that it is reasonable to take the original six units, and when you create either as additional space or simply a conversion of space, if you do it with an idea to energy conservation at the same time, something like what we do, and then that might be too much for most people. I said we can use these six units that become 16 units, and the energy required to run these houses, these units, will be no more than it is to start with.
Right.
Okay? So our global footprint, our energy consumption, all that stuff, we are making much more efficient. And we could try to build that into. And there's no reason not to. It's not difficult. And the good thing about it is when you buy stuff at Walmart, 85% of the stuff is Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
When you buy stuff at the building center, I bet you 95% of the stuff is North American. Yep. So the other 85 is Chinese at Walmart. At the building center, it's almost all. We buy very little. Some of the tools now are made in China. But the nails are made in China, but not a whole lot of nails.
Got to start making that stuff here.
Yeah. Well, we gave up making them here. But anyway, so the amount of jobs we get from this, as opposed to buying a TV, you know, we get no jobs from the TV other than the guy that takes the Panasonics from Montreal to the store. This is a very good job creator for the Canadian economy.
So you have to put a plan together then to unite the municipal government and the provincial government, and it would be great if you could do a project using your way of building houses because it saves on energy, if the city would just change a few zoning areas and let you pick a spot.
Yep, it's true, but it's difficult to know where the thing starts. I mean, my role was to put it in front of them as an idea that wasn't threatening and that filled a blank. If your role as the sort of the educated press is to put it in front of here and say, you know, if not this, what else?
Come up with another plan, exactly.
That's right. So, I mean, if somebody has some other plan, I mean, and other people might say, well, look, we're going to do the airport lands. Well, the airport lands is going to cost $350 million to start with. And if it all goes to plan, if I read this right, if it all goes to plan, it could come up with a surplus of $50 million a year, right? So that's great. But the risk is $350 million. And the thing remains that the street that I put the profile up still is an asset which is paying very poorly. It's still losing money. It's still an opportunity. And when you have an opportunity that doesn't cost any money, why wouldn't you use it?
Exactly.
Right? So it's a little bit like an oil well. It's producing service. And it more service than is required, but we're wasting it.
Well, we have one of the projects similar to what you're talking about. I think they went about it all wrong. They took a lot of wood. There was just a plot of land with a lot of old trees, 100-year-old trees on it in the city. Downtown core, I don't know what it was saved from or for or whatever, but instead of finding brownfields or someplace that nobody wants to clear, they took away the trees, which is obviously the easiest.
Well, they took away from one of the parks, from Gage Park, I think.
It's not a park. It should be a park, but it's not a park. They just took a little inner city, little parkette, let's call it, chopped down all the trees, and said, we're doing intensity building, and this is one of the poverty groups. So they'll have women's housing or women's in harm building. That's already up and running. And supposed to be 8-story for the homeless and another 8-story for the old age people. But it looks like more than 8 stories already. So that's something that's really, it's put like a hack mark, chop into the neighborhood. It just took away that part of the neighborhood, changed the whole view of the neighborhood. It's built the way they build a lot of them. Had they done that idea with your building ideas in mind, that would have been an improvement. Maybe some of the neighborhood people would say, okay, we won't mind so much because this is a good idea. The way they're building it is not going to cost electricity in the future.
Right.
So it was a plan that was approved and stamped and all that years before, yet it wasn't altered when we finally realized we have to change the zoning.
Yep.
So I think that's one of the places to start, is to look at what's already on the books, what's already, it's sitting there stalled. It's got land, somebody owns it. There were plans put down to change it into whatever they were going to change it, but it's not going any place. It's like demolition by neglect, which Hamilton is famous for. And talk to the city about that plot of land and talk to the owner about that plot of land and say, look, you're not going anywhere right now with this. How about this idea? And present it to them, involve them in the plan.
Yep.
And see if that project moves along. Anything that heads forward that allows the less use of electricity is ideal.
Yeah. Well, this I didn't want to make it too complicated. I wanted to stick to the agenda of this is going to save the city a ton of money, or make it money so it can pay its bills. And it's not going to be a big change, at least to look at. People are very concerned about their neighborhood, you know, changing too much to look at. Sometimes it's a matter of, oh, you know, we don't want people renting. This is an owner thing. So people get a little excited about it. But one of the biggest things is what they see. And if you go back to the drawings, you can see the similarity between the original profile and the other one. The building hardly changes. Mm. It's got a porch. It's got solar panels on the roof. The third one gets a second floor addition, the one in the middle. The farmhouse gets a basement apartment, and the room on the house on the right-hand side, it's a 1960 ranch house on the corner. It gets demolished and is replaced by four townhouses.
Yeah, well.
So even that four townhouses, they probably increased the roof area on that house by about double.
Yes.
But it's probably that complex is now probably housing 10 people. As opposed to what it was about two before.
I'd like to see it also incorporate something that we must change in the future. So I'd like to see it incorporate solar and wind. What's the problem with small windmills on vertical?
I think my windmill, it's actually the wind did some damage last night. That's the first time I've got a problem with my windmill since I started.
That's a good size, though, your windmill, though, right?
Well, yeah, it's 80 feet up. But wind in the city makes a little bit of noise that I think people are going to find objectionable. On the other hand, solar, if you can see the drawing well enough, you see all the panels on the roof. So the things that are on the roof in the drawing are panels. So it shows that, by and large, every one of those units is generating a substantial amount of electricity right on site. And it sort of looks okay, right? It just sort of works.
We found it. I don't understand this one thing. The federal building, and the old federal building at Maine and Caroline, sitting there empty, apparently is going to eventually be demolished for a parking lot. It had solar panels on the roof.
Yeah, those are hot water panels. They're not electricity panels, as far as I know.
And the building's gone to rot, and it's sitting there rotting.
Yeah. That, in fact, we need to have houses built in such a way that promotes the installation of solar panels. And I did say that it's essential that roads run east-west and not north-south, the main roads.
Where is that again?
Well, the roads that run east-west, if that's the ones the houses face, their roof line is appropriate for installing solar panels, whether the solar panels are for electricity or for hot water.
Thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah. If you run houses and the main ones that front the street are running north-south, they overheat in the summer because of the hot summer sun, and they are not conducive to adding panels. So I told them that if you run streets east-west, if what happens in the future is what we expect, those houses will generate half of their heating and hot water needs, heating, cooling, and hot water needs. They will generate half of those needs locally, on site.
That's right. So a few little tweaks and changes like that.
Yeah, but it doesn't cost any more money to run them east-west, right? If the new streets, it doesn't cost any more money.
Okay, Dave, good luck in all your other work that you're doing. I hope you manage to get a project from the city.
Well, it would be nice. I've offered to do them before. I didn't offer this time, but I hope that they know that I'd be happy to do it.
Keep plugging away at it. I think one of the first people they're going to put their hand to and ask to help them will be you once they suddenly go, oh, yeah, we're going to have to do this.
Yeah. Anyway, the last thing I'll end up with is, and that was they asked, while I was still there, they asked the staff if they wanted to comment. And basically, the staff comments were very much in line with this specific thing. They were actually smiling and saying good things.
Important times. Thanks, Dave.
Okay, Maggie. Nice to talk to you. You look after yourself.
We'll talk to you again.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Redefining Radio.
Synchro Radio.